Welcome to the DLEI FinTech Conclave 2024 podcast series brought to you by the Digital Lenders Association of India and India FinTech Diaries. September 2022 was a watershed moment in the history of digital lending in India as the Reserve Bank of India introduced the digital lending guidelines. Now, it's been a little over a year since the guidelines were introduced, and in this episode, we unpack the impact these guidelines have had on the digital lending industry. Joining us today is Sanjay Khan Nagra, a partner at India's leading law firm, Kaitan & Co. Based in Bangalore, Sanjay specializes in venture capital and tech M&A transactions and in terms of sectors, takes a keen interest in fintech, e-commerce, consumer internet, and other intersections of law and technology, and also frequently advises companies, entrepreneurs, and investors in these areas. Apart from his regular work as part of the Indian Software Product Industry Roundtable, iSpirit, and the Digital Lenders Association of India, DLEI, Sanjay closely works with entrepreneurs and governmental agencies to bring about various impactful policy changes for the benefit of startups and the Indian tech and fintech sectors. I'm your host, Elroy Sarau, and this is India FinTech Diaries. Welcome to India FinTech Diaries, the show for all things Indian fintech. Today, we continue with a collaboration with the Digital Lenders Association of India on the occasion of the DLEI FinTech Conclave 2024. As per the Praxis Digital Lending Report, digital lending is projected to be 17% of the overall credit disbursements in India by FY26, growing to at almost 22% per year. To further give structure to this rapidly growing industry, in September 2022, the RBI introduced the digital lending guidelines and subsequently issued clarifications and FAQs in February 2023. Now, it's been about a little over a year since then, and we thought it would be interesting to now examine the impact of those guidelines have had on the industry. And joining us to discuss this and unpack this entire area, we have with us Sanjay Khan Nagra, partner Kaitan & Co. Welcome to India FinTech Diaries, Sanjay.
Thanks, Elroy. Happy to be here and discuss this.
Sanjay, to begin with, maybe you could quickly spend recapping some of the salient points of the digital lending guidelines for the listeners. Let's spend maybe 5 minutes on that.
Just to recap where this entire thing began, mid last decade, 2015 onwards, the entire fintech ecosystem started booming. Payment companies and other companies started coming up. Mostly the focus was on lending companies, right? A lot of fintechs came in and they wanted to utilize the space which was left open by banks. And a lot of mushrooming happened in the digital lending ecosystem. Then we know what happened. Chinese companies came in because China banned payday loans. A lot of money flew into the country in this space. And that sort of continued rising year on year. In COVID, immediately post-COVID, fault lines started appearing. And there were defaults and there were recoveries and there were other impacts of all of it, which led to RBI sort of thinking that something needs to be done about this space. There are a lot of structures that are mushrooming. There are a lot of companies which are good, bad, and all sorts of people are in the space. So some ground rules need to be set. And the RBI formed a working group in January 2021. The group submitted report in November 21, and the guidelines were then notified in September 22. The idea of the guidelines was, like I said, to set the ground rules. And if I can draw an analogy to, say, cricket, people were playing gully cricket in whatever form or shape. They were making their own rules. Fintechs were engaging with banks, NBFCs, and on a case-by-case basis, they were figuring out what commercially worked for them and putting it on paper and executing those structures, much like how you would figure out the rules of a gully cricket based on how your particular playground appears in the number of players, etc. And then came in these guidelines and they became like the ICC or said that, look, now we will have umpires on ground, we will have certain basic rules. You can't go beyond those rules and you'll have to all play within those same rules. Now you can choose whether you want to play the game or not. And and then they defined who the lender is, who the DLA is, who the LSP, DLA being digital lending app and LSP being lending service provider. And they defined very clearly who is responsible for what. And if you do certain activities, then you become an LSP. For instance, if you're involved in customer acquisition, underwriting support, pricing support, servicing, monitoring, etc., etc., you are an LSP. And if you are providing just an application with a user interface that facilitates lending, then you are a DLA. And the idea was to clearly call out who is who and who can do what. And then certain ground rules around what you cannot do. For instance, what you cannot do with data. Data has to be stored in India. You cannot collect and retain data beyond what is really required for you. You need to provide a key fact statement to ensure transparency, which was earlier was not provided in most of the cases. You need to have a proper grievance redressal mechanism with a clear timeline of 30 days. You can't just say that I am just a tech platform as a fintech and I'm not responsible to do everything that a lender is required to do. You need to clearly tell the borrowers who the lender is. Every lender needs to tell the borrowers who are the DLAs and LSPs it is engaged with. So, and by the way, immediately after the guidelines, there were there was some sort of a quote-unquote whitelisting process where each lender was asked to tell us who are the LSPs and DLAs you are engaged with, so that you know, people can come to know of that. And if there were apps which were not within that whitelisting, they were asked to sort of be taken down, right? And and most importantly, the relationship between the LSP/DLA and the lender was structured in the way that lending function, the essential lending function of calling out who should be given the loan to and how much should be given to, etc., the basic underwriting of a loan should be done by the lender who's writing the check. And it should not be a blank reliance or blanket reliance on the LSP, which made a whole lot of difference because that forced all the lenders to think through much more than what probably they were at the time. And a year and a half later, one can clearly see the difference in the market based on how it has sort of panned out.
Sanjay, now let's start unpacking some of the impact areas, right? I think when the guidelines were first announced, there was considerable fuzziness about how the first loss default guarantees, FLDGs, would work, you know, whether they would actually be allowed or in some form completely prohibited. But then in June of last year, the RBI announced new guidelines that allowed for FLDGs up to 5% of loan portfolio. Now, how in your view has this been received by the industry so far and what's been the impact?
So, yeah, you're right. Initially, they had simply said that no form of synthetic securitization should be allowed or it should follow the securitization norms, etc. And it was quite unclear to the industry as to what the intent is there, whether they're allowing, not allowing, whether they're not allowing for LSPs who are non-REs or they're allowing for REs. There was a lot of confusion. Finally, last year, they came out with the FLDG guidelines, or DLG guidelines, which basically clarify that, firstly, it should be specified upfront. It should not exceed more than 5% of the outstanding portfolio. There should be a repayment of it, or if one is invoking the DLG, then the payment should be made within 120 days once the loan becomes outstanding. And it is only permitted with LSPs or other REs, right? And then there are disclosure requirements and the like. Now, what has this done in the market is, A, going back to my earlier point of forcing underwriting primarily at the lender's end. Because in the absence of this 5% limit, if the DLG was given for more than, say, 50% or say, let's say 100% in some cases.
Correct. Then the lender didn't care on the underwriting.
Yeah, then there's no skin in the game. They'll just, it's just lending their license to somebody else to lend based on. Right. And that was sort of plugged by this. The impact of it is that today there is very clear understanding for an LSP as to what it can do or what it is expected to do by the regulator, which means that you can be a tech company. There is a need for tech companies, which has been recognized by the Reserve Bank. And they understand that not all lenders would have the tech stack, which is required for a seamless sort of experience for the consumer, and therefore they will need to partner with tech service providers, and to that extent they have allowed LSP partners. But the core lending function has to be with the lender, and therefore if you are an LSP who wants to take underwriting risk also, who wants to get involved more than just providing the technology and some support services, then you need to be prepared mentally to get a lending license yourself. And that is one big change that has happened in the mindset of people who are operating in this space. Now they are clearly categorizing themselves from day one into one of the two buckets. One is a tech stack provider as an LSP or a DLA, or a tech stack plus plus, which is getting a license and at some point becoming a lender itself. And we have seen cases where people have come together. If there were various group entities operating, they're now saying that we'll have one entity which will be both the tech service provider as well as the NBFC. We want to do on-book lending, and therefore we want to apply. And because our biggest advantage is, say, the capital that we have access to, plus our underwriting models, plus our tech stack, so we want to combine all of it and get regulated, right? Or we don't want to get into this, and we'll just be the LSP. We'll provide FLDG, but not beyond 5%.
Sanjay, another key area was the definition of how lending service providers are to be defined and how they may impact the definition of payment aggregators or PAs. Now, in the clarification in February 2023, RBI did provide some guidance on how PAs and LSPs are to be treated. And this is primarily to do with how they will actually interact with the funds and the dispersal. 1 year later, what roles do you see the two types of entities playing in the digital lending space?
Again, RBI clarified that, look, these are two different functions and they should not be merged in one entity.
Right.
And therefore, one is that as an LSP, you need to be sort of above board. You cannot be involved in the core decision making for the loan as well as disbursement and repayment, right? You can't be involved in fund flow as well as the core decision making. And therefore, you need to choose if you want to be involved in fund flow and you want to provide aggregation services, then you do that. Don't become LSP. And if you are an LSP, then don't do that. And therefore, maintain that church and state divide between the two and follow that. And that, I think, has had an impact because people have realized that in the earlier days, one would want to do, as a fintech, look, you want to do everything, right?
Correct.
Whatever can give you some more business and outreach, you would want to do all of that. And the whole game in just before the guidelines was to leverage one part of your business for growing another part of business, right? And that's where the data play and leveraging one PA business for LSP business or LSP business or some other business, etc., mushroomed.
Right.
And that's where the impact has been. Now, there are, again, despite best efforts of any regulator, there will always be certain open and gray areas. Right. And there are open and gray areas around how you define payment function and LSP function, what exactly is within the PA services ambit, what exactly is meant by not putting both the things in one entity, right? And whether some views can be taken around it, etc. I think there are various thoughts in the market and the ecosystem around it. But by and large, RBI is very clear that you can't have both key functions of payment aggregation as well as LSP in one entity, and you need to separate the two.
Yeah, and Sanjay, I think the other, the biggest product that was actually impacted by these guidelines was actually BNPL, right? And I was curious to know, how is the BNPL operational model changed after the digital lending guidelines? And also, as a related question, post the guidelines, are BNPL peers now being subject to higher reporting requirements in terms of reporting to the bureaus and the regulator?
So, yes, there is higher reporting requirement, which is inherent in the way, you know, some business models were playing out. For instance, now one has to clearly set out in the KFS what are the key aspects of the loan. And when you do that, you tell people how much they are borrowing, what is the tenure, what the interest rate, penalty, etc., all of that. And in the classic BNPL model previous to these regulations, there were models where people were giving sort of a line, which was a revolving sort of facility, where people would just take a very high number, and then within that high number, there'd be disbursements, and therefore bureau reporting would happen in a very, very different way, right?
Correct.
Whereas now, because of this KFS, one has to set out very clearly, and if you really put a high number, it is unlikely that the borrower will go ahead, right? And therefore, it has forced people to put the correct number, which is a very good thing, and the borrower will proceed with that. And if there's a default there, one will have to report because it's a loan. Each of these disbursements, which were earlier disbursements, now has become a loan in that sense, And therefore, there are multiple reportings to that extent, and a lot of streamlining has happened. It has impacted those earlier BNPL models, and to the extent people were sort of relying on those to for their businesses, they had to make quite a few fundamental changes, right? And the data storage part also, by the way, has had an impact on BNPL structures, because BNPL structures were also relying on cross-utilization of data, right?
Correct.
If you're a tech entity, you could provide some BNPL service in partnership with a lender and use data to cross-sell some other product through somebody else or through you, through yourself or some group entity, etc. Now, it is quite clear that you cannot hold data, use data beyond what you really need to, right? And that has impacted the cross-utilization of data. DPDP will further, once the rules are notified and everybody has to follow it very, very strictly, will further make it more difficult for people to misuse data, right?
Right.
So that, I think, has had an impact on data utilization, will further impact people as the DPDP rollout happens.
Sanjay, it's a good thing that you brought up this whole thing about the key fact statements, etc., that lenders need to provide, right? And recently, we also saw the very first impact of non-compliance in this space, where a very large lender was asked by the RBI to stop sanction and dispersal of some of its EMI products. Now, in your experience, have you seen lenders actively work to comply to the requirement? And more importantly, what are some of the challenges that they have faced, especially in cases where the products are innovative?
So, firstly, KFS is a regulatory requirement, so you have to comply with it, right?
Correct.
So you have to give KFS. Now, innovation by definition is something you cannot stop or cannot legislate for, right? The moment you say that you can do this, you cannot do that, people will figure out ways and means of reading into the can of it and the cannot of it. And that's how the evolution of any legal system happens. Now, the real question is, what is in the gray zone or between can and can't? What is whitish gray and what is blackish gray? And that's right. Where people can be innovative. Whitish gray is the part where they should be. And ultimately, it all goes back to the intent of the parties. At least in our experience with the regulator and what we have seen and heard in the market, the regulator is quite open in this space. I must take a moment to commend the Reserve Bank on how it has gone about regulating the ecosystem. Yes, there have been some harsh steps taken by the Reserve Bank, but by and large, if you see, steps have not been taken to the extent that the industry cannot operate at all, you know?
Yeah, and they've also been always with some good reason behind taking those
absolutely
steps.
Absolutely. And we have seen cases where if the there are routine audits, firstly, after COVID, right. The audits have, the physical audits when they started, a lot of things, because the industry during COVID had moved quite a bit. Pre-COVID, fintech industry, particularly in the lending space, and post-COVID industry was completely different, right? And a lot of calls, aggressive, non-aggressive calls were taken by various people during the COVID time. And when the physical audit started in detail, when, you know, everything was looked at by the Reserve Bank, questions were raised on many things. And those questions at sometimes were answered by people by saying, okay, fine, you know, what you're saying makes sense. We did not think of it that way. And now that you're saying, we'll just correct it. And that's an approach that has worked with RBI to the extent your intent is clear, that you're not trying to misuse the vagueness in the law or the what is unsaid in the law, right? And that approach, by the way, is really good, because RBI recognizes that this is an emerging area. This is a very, very fast evolving area globally. And everybody is trying to play the catch-up game. So to that extent, I think they've been very open-minded. And on some of these innovative structures or innovative calls being taken, to the extent RBI can permit those, keeping in mind the broader policy framework and the ultimately what is their intent here. They want to make sure that if you are taking a 1,000 rupee loan, you are actually taking just 1,000 rupee loan. If you are told that you will be charged 20% interest on it, then it is just 20%, nothing beyond that, right? Etc. etc. So consumer protection is the core of it. There are recovery practices that they are really, really concerned about, which are very, very core of it. Malpractices around KYC and misuse of that KYC and data collected from consumer is again a core an important part. So long as these things are taken care of and people are willing to abide by what RBI finds in their audit and otherwise notifies, and you can clearly showcase your intent, I think people are, there is room for a lot of discussion with RBI on these matters.
Sanjay, while we discuss some of the more obvious areas where lending guidelines have had an impact so far, can you also share in your view some of the less obvious impact areas that folks may not really understand because of the nuances involved?
Like any law, there are open areas or no law can be perfect in answering all questions that may arise, right?
Right.
And therefore, even in this law, there are certain areas which are slightly open-ended. For instance, there is just no foolproof way of defining what digital lending itself should be, right? Yes, right. It should be remote and automated. What is really meant by remote and automated? If somebody goes door to door, collects KYC data, but KYC data is collected, so he's approaching the customer on foot in physically door to door, but then everything else thereafter happens on a tab. He's collecting all the KYC data on tab, on his tablet, and then passing on that data to a centralized processing unit where it is just happening online through a software and a lending decision is taken immediately. Is it digital? Is it physical? Or if that process takes some more hoops where he is passing on the data to another person, that person is then passing it on to another person, but everything else is happening in a digital space. Is it digital? Is it physical? So there are nuances around how do you define some of these things. Who is a DLA, for instance, in an app-in-app construct? There are many ways in which app-in-app can also operate, right? And therefore, how would those things play out? There are questions around what exactly is meant by each of the LSP functions, right? But the way LSP is defined, one could stretch the definition to include some of the players who are not intended to be covered by LSP definition. So I think those areas will come up in many discussions. There are business models that keep evolving. Just today, I had a call with an emerging fintech where they are just in idea stage and they have an idea of a product which actually is not fitting in any of the categories that are generally understood by market. Right? So they'll keep coming up in the next 2-3 years, 4-5 years, we'll keep seeing regulations also undergoing changes. Right? For the whole thing about KYC, for instance, it was there pre the guidelines also, but post the guidelines, because there are clear roles and responsibilities of LSP and lender, etc., there's a lot of focus on KYC and outsourcing related matters between LSPs and lenders. And that has put KYC master direction at the center of all discussions. And what can be the correct KYC? Is it VSIP? Is it something else? When should you do face-to-face? Face-to-face is mandatory, but can you replace it with something else? Many questions are there.
Thanks a ton, Sanjay, for the conversation so far. This has definitely been interesting to understand the impact of digital lending guidelines.
Thank you so much, Ola. I really enjoyed it.
That's it from India FinTech Diaries this week. In case you haven't registered, please do sign up for the DLAI FinTech Conclave 2024. Now in its fifth edition, the event is on the 6th of March at ITC Maratha, Mumbai, and brings together digital lenders, technology firms, government officials, banks, NBFCs, investors, and various startups to celebrate the industry as well as plan the year ahead. This year's theme of FinTech Evolution, Pioneering India's Financial Landscape, promises to be a timely topic as FinTech matures in India. So do attend, and until next time, stay safe.